This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 206 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, looking forward to a good show. We don't got a lot to talk about other than the U.S. military and DJI, but I think that'll fill up a 30-minute show. What do you think?
I think so. We've got an interesting juxtaposition between commercial and military this episode with some things that have been going on in the news.
So I know this is probably going to go down as our shortest introduction, but we probably should get started.
Okay, let's do it, David.
Well, our first article tonight is about drone data security, and data and uses in it will be probably be the big theme for the night. And this is from SUAS News. We're talking about data security and all of the data that now we are realizing is being collected when you're flying your drone. How are you protecting that, or what's being recorded, etc.?
Yeah, what we see in this article is some of the data that's collected during the flight of DJI drones, or at least some of them. And it includes things, according to SUAS News, like flight log information, GPS positioning, aerial sensor captured data, and app stored data. Now, in this article, we see that this data actually goes back to the DJI servers when you're logged into your DJI Go app. And if you're not connected to the internet at that point, supposedly it actually caches the data and sends it back to the servers later. This is causing a little bit of, consternation, as I guess you'd think it would.
Yeah, metadata or locational data is kind of frightening. And this is the kind of stuff that's lurking underneath what you're thinking of doing or what you're taking a video of or where you're flying. All of this data is sort of being accumulated and I don't think most people realized it was.
And this is sort of a popular topic with the whole Internet of Things conversation, IoT. Many devices now are connected to the internet. They're providing valuable service to you. Part of that service can involve transmissions over the net. For example, we have a trail camera. And we got this because we had some strange activity in our backyard. So we got a trail camera, and that's where we discovered that there really is all kinds of wildlife back there at night. It's kind of rather scary. But what it does is it transmits over the cell system. And so when it takes photographs of the deer or the raccoons or whatever's in your backyard, it sends it to your cell phone. That's very convenient. But you have to ask, just what information is being collected? Where is it residing? And another issue associated with this is what's the security of that data? So here we see another kind of a device, in this case, DJI drones. And reportedly, this data is being sent back to DJI servers, flight logs, even images from your flight that happened to be in your flight log, all going back to DJI, according to this source.
And it's not an opt-out or an opt-in. It's sort of just has been happening. So, you know, when we always talk, and I know that I talk to my friends and coworkers about data security, you know, when you just sort of ignore all of that stuff and you hit just approve when you get a new app on your phone, you really need to read that to make sure that you understand what you're giving authority to. And evidently, DJI is keeping a lot of information that most people didn't realize. And this has gotten to be a bit conspiratorial, which leads us into the next story, which is also from SUAS News. U.S. Army calls units to discontinue using DJI equipment. Why? Because the information's being sent back to China, which is where the DJI servers are.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting move. The SUAS News posts a letter in this article. It's an August 2nd letter from the Department of the Army. It's a memorandum for record. And in it, in part, it says, cease all use, uninstall all DJI applications, remove all batteries and storage media from devices, and secure equipment for follow-on direction. Now, where does the information originate here? Well, the article says it's because the U.S. Army Research Lab and also the U.S. Navy concluded that there are operational risks associated with DJI equipment. Now, I can understand that. I mean, if there may be instances where this data is being transmitted to foreign servers or just to a server anywhere, I can certainly understand why the military would want to step back from that, at least until the situation is clarified. I think in some ways, you know, I'm not ready to say that DJI is certainly collecting this information or that it is residing on their servers, but there's enough indications that that may be the case that the U.S. Army anyway is saying, all right, you know, stand down on this until we understand this better.
This is one of those laws of unintended consequences. You have a military using a civilian application, right? Now, the implication in a lot of the articles that have come out over this week is that DJI is part of the Chinese spy system here in the United States. I'm not sure I actually fully accept that, but there are other unintended consequences, like, is the information from the drone being sent back to DJI encrypted, or is it just a normal feed? If it's not encrypted, there's a chance that somebody else with bad intentions can assume that data or capture that data. So, like you implied, Max, this is okay, we need to take a step back and look at what's actually happening and not necessarily the evil empire impression that a lot of these articles gave the impression of, or some of the reactions from organizations on Twitter, that it's not I'm not convinced that DJI is intentionally spying for the Chinese government, I guess is what I would like to say about that.
Right. For one thing, I mean, they may be. Well, they may be. I don't know. If they were doing that, you could argue that that's a really risky strategy, because if they are and it was found out, that would be the end of it, right? That's a great way to kill a multi-billion-dollar company. So you have to kind of wonder if they would actually take a risk like that. But, you know, another aspect of this that's kind of interesting, David, is the fact that, you know, we're seeing U.S. military organizations using commercial products, using a commercial drone.
They're cheap and they work really well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, as a U.S. taxpayer, I'm okay with them using off-the-shelf hardware if it works really well and it does what it's supposed to do.
But I think it's a bit unusual, because more typically, I think there's a mil-spec. There's a military specification for a product, and of course it's going to cost more because you're building a special purpose piece of equipment. It's the screwdriver, the hammer that costs $5,000. And the reason it costs $5,000 is because it has to be built to this very precise spec. The manufacturer doesn't make these at all, so you kind of make a small, a short run of some real specialized, unique kind of device. So, yeah, I mean, I can understand the motivation for the military to employ commercial off-the-shelf products, but, those carry a risk. And especially if you're talking about, in my mind, anything like this that's got communications going on between computers, back to servers, things like that. You don't really control that.
Agreed. And I guess we step forward and now we're going to take a couple of steps back, and we'll have to follow this a little bit more. But let's talk about the other side, because this story has really had legs this week. This is from TheVerge.com. A government study found DJI drone banned by the U.S. Army actually kept the data safe. So now what? What do you think, Max?
Well, this comes from a test conducted by NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. This was actually a test in October last year, 2016. Now, they tested a DJI S-1000. And what they did is they used software, actually like a packet sniffer, to actually monitor transmissions between the drone and the computer. And in the NOAA report, they say, quote, "The majority of transactions to the DJI servers were to log into DJI servers hosted at both Amazon Web Services and Linode to check for software updates. These transactions are quite common for software of this type, and nothing unusual was detected during the experiment." And they also say there was no evidence whatsoever of any attempt by any software to transfer any data from the aircraft. But you have to ask some questions. Maybe different DJI models behave differently. Maybe NOAA didn't use the DJI app. They used third-party remote and an independent ground station. So maybe that was the reason why. But the most interesting thing, though, was what one of the authors of the study did, a little bit of testing of his own on his own time. The results, David, are kind of interesting.
Of course, it was a Phantom, which if you're going to have something that's going to send encrypted data back to DJI, you'd want it in the thing that sends most of it back, which would be the Phantom. But this personal Phantom 3 was actually sending encrypted data back to DJI servers. So does that mean he used, is it the actual aircraft or hardware, or is it the DJI phone app that's doing this? So interesting. I guess it leaves to be decided furthermore. What is it, the aircraft? Is it the app? I mean, is it a specific software update? It would be interesting. Here, this is pretty diabetical. How about we look at it this? That your one software update sends the encrypted information back, and a couple weeks later, the software update removes that functionality. And then later on, another software update puts the functionality back. So it's not, now, how's that for dark theory? So it's interesting.
Lots of questions. We need some answers. I think a lot of people are going to be looking for answers. I don't know who's taking the lead, if anybody, in terms of really understanding exactly what's happening here. It would be interesting to hear from DJI and see what they have to say.
And let's be serious. If anybody took the lead, it was the Army saying, stop using it.
I guess so, yeah.
I mean, that's the first step in the path and in the process. So, I don't know. Well, this one is going to be a follow-on for a long time. But we actually got an answer to a question that I had three episodes ago, where we brought up the article that said that the Air Force and the United States military weren't sure what to do if a drone flew over like Langley Air Force Base and started taking pictures of F-22s. What does that mean? And they had no direction whether they could shoot down the drone or not. Well, believe it or not, the Pentagon has come out with an answer. And the answer is, Max?
Yep. If you have a drone flying over a military installation and that's cause for concern, the military is authorized to take action. And this comes from, well, it's really a two-step kind of a process here in terms of the information flow. First, we have last month in July, apparently a classified policy was sent to the services from the Pentagon, outlining presumably what they were allowed to do. But then last week, there was an unclassified guidance sent to the military installations that described how they could communicate the new policy to local communities.
Communication is very simple. One quick way to lose your drone is to fly it over a U.S. military installation. They will shoot first, ask questions later.
Yeah, I think so. We have a quote from a Pentagon spokesman, Navy Captain Jeff Davis, who said that military installations, quote, retain the right of self-defense when it comes to UAVs or drones operating over them. The new guidance does afford the ability to take action to stop these threats, and that includes disabling, destroying, and tracking. So I think the military bases, and in this case, according to this article, over 150 military bases were informed of this policy or this guidance. And so, like you say, David, if you think you'd like to take a look at what's going on over the fence in a military base, I don't use your drone because you probably won't get it back. Of course, it'll be interesting to see what methods are employed to identify the drones, track them, take them down, all of that.
Yeah, we definitely have a interesting. This is where all of the anti-drone weaponry systems come out, whether shoot first or jamming them or who knows what the current military has.
So there's the answer. Yeah, I remember the conversation we had earlier, David, which was, I think you bringing up the point that there was no policy because you're talking about, can the military take down a, quote, aircraft in the national airspace, in the airspace, even if it's over a military installation? And I think you pointed out previously that they didn't have the procedure. They didn't have the orders or the guidance that would tell them how to react, and it sounds like now they do.
And of course, we evidently, back when we were talking about it, there was a direction given, but it was classified. Now it's out in the open, and the public notification really was geared towards the public,
right,
and not necessarily the military themselves, because they had already gotten the direction.
Yes.
So the next story comes from our co-host on Airplane Geeks and our executive producer, Brian Coleman. And this is from Data Privacy and Security Insider. 50 airports across the U.S. to adopt automated airspace authorizations for drones.
Yeah, just by way of some background, if you visit the FAA page on Unmanned Aircraft System Traffic Management, that's their UTM page, it says this. It says, the FAA is currently in acquisition for the first step of a UTM system. Again, that's Unmanned Aircraft Traffic Management. This is called the Low Altitude Authorization and Notification Capability. LANC, L-A-A-N-C, which supports air traffic control authorization requirements for UAS operations conducted under the Special Rule for Model Aircraft, Part 101E, and the Small UAS Rule, Part 107. The current airport notification and airspace authorization processes are manual for the small UAS. Lank will provide part 101 and part 107, UAS operators, a streamlined solution to enable real-time automated notification and authorization. So that's what the FAA has said they were working towards. And now what we see is that, again, 50 airports are going to start using Lank in later this year, in autumn of 2017. And this sounds like a good step, David, in terms of the impact on UAS operators who are flying near airports.
It's standardization. Remember, we've talked, remember those back in those dark hallowed days when we first started the show, and the FAA said you had to notify a control tower, and the control tower would go, huh? You're who, and you want to do what, and you're where? Well, this sounds like the FAA has got some standardization.
And an automated response, right? This is something that you're going to be able to do online.
Everybody benefits. What a concept.
Right. It's supposed to be instant response, digital approval. You'll be able to apply for automated authorizations to fly in controlled airspace around those particular airports, those 50 airports. Now, 50 airports sounds like a lot, but there are a lot of other airports. That's just a small percentage of the total.
There's also a lot of uncontrolled airspace.
Yes, true.
And for some of our listeners, if you don't know, one of the very famous aviation is uncontrolled airspace, or UCAP. And uncontrolled airspace means there's no tower there. So this is going to be a whole, I don't know how that's going to work. I'm assuming this will start at the largest airports and filter down to the smaller ones. But keep in mind, still, if you're just a hobbyist, stay away from 5 miles from an airport. Just make everybody safe. If you're a 107 hobby, if 107 and you have a part 107 and you're a professional, this is something you need to look into, because we don't want anybody flying unsafe. So now that I've gotten off my soapbox, we should probably move on. But this is a really good thing. I was very excited about reading about this.
Yeah, I think it's a great move. And they expect to add additional airports in 2018. So kind of a phased rollout here.
Well, the next story, I have to admit, has been baffling me for weeks, or actually a couple of days. It just seems like weeks. This was going in the show notes, but Drone Mama beat me to it. And this was from CNN.com. U.S. jet and Iranian drone forces evasive action. So the Nimitz is currently on patrol in the Persian Gulf, and a F/A-18 was on final approach to the Nimitz for landing, and an Iranian QOM drone came within 100 feet below the F/A-18 and 200 feet to the side. On final approach. Now, on final approach to an airport, that's one thing. On final approach to an aircraft carrier, that's completely another. And what baffles the heck out of me is, how did a drone get within 100 feet of an F-18 and 200 feet to the side in a final approach to a U.S. aircraft carrier? No one's been able to answer how that drone got into that defensive perimeter of the Nimitz.
Yeah, interesting. I think that, according to many of the press reports, there has been a lot of Iranian drone activity around some of the U.S. ships.
Agreed, but, you know, it's one thing to have an aircraft come into the defensive perimeter and you launch another aircraft and you sort of escort them out of the way, you know, and that happened, I think, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, there was a Iranian F-4 Phantom that was perusing the Persian Gulf and got into one of the defensive perimeters of one of the ships. And an F-22 magically suddenly appeared behind him, waved at him, and the F-4 bolted because the F-22 came from nowhere. But somebody in the Navy needs to explain to me how we're letting drones get into the perimeter, other than that it's decided that it probably isn't worth shooting it down and causing an international incident. But I don't know. This is really kind of frightening. we lost an aircraft because of a stupid Iranian drone, being in a place where it's not supposed to, it kind of gets me upset.
Do you know much about this QOM-1 drone, how big it is? Or
it's about the size of, it's their kind of equivalent to a Predator. It's not a very, I mean, it's a larger size drone or a full size drone. It's not, we're not talking about something that's like hand launched or smaller, but it's enough to be tracked on radar. It's enough to be noticed, you know, and the F-18 did see it. So it took evasive action. So a smaller drone could have been much more dangerous because personally, an F-18 pilot is paying attention to the aircraft carrier when he's flying onto the deck and not necessarily looking around for other unmanned aircraft, where you would actually have that on a, say, an airliner coming into an airport. You actually have a pilot and a co-pilot, you know, so somebody can keep an eye on the surroundings. In this case, if you're an F-18 pilot, you're looking straight at the deck and trying to find the meatball and trying to get your aircraft safely onto the deck. So you don't need distractions like drones showing up in your flight pattern.
Yeah, I can imagine.
How about, well, let's talk about, and this sort of comes into our video of the week, and that is from digitaltrends.com, a vertical landing drone that can stick to walls like a fly.
It comes from researchers at the University of Sherbrooke in Quebec, Canada. And what they've done is they've observed birds that perch when they come in. They can see how a bird approaches its landing point, spot, how it changes the thrust to provide some lift, and just the whole action of the bird coming into perch. And they try to recreate that in an unmanned small plane, which they've succeeded in doing. So this thing is it's a fixed-wing drone. It's capable of perching and taking off again repeatedly. And in fact, this thing can even reposition itself on the wall, although they're working on developing that capability further. So it's a fascinating video that we have here. And basically what this drone does is it has a wall detection sensor on it.
I wish I had a wall detection sensor someday.
Yeah, you were walked into a wall before, David.
I tend to do that a lot these days. So,
well, this thing knows. Its name actually is SMAD, which stands for Sherbrooke Multimodal Autonomous Drone, the SMAD. And so it detects a wall. It can see when it's coming up to a wall. As it approaches, it transitions rapidly into a pitch-up kind of attitude. The nose comes up. As it's doing this, it's maintaining its horizontal speed in this pitch-up attitude as it approaches the wall. And then as it hits the wall, there are micro-spine feet that grip the wall. So I guess this thing probably wouldn't grip something polished or like glass. I don't think this would work on glass. But otherwise, it sort of sticks to the wall. They had some interesting development issues, one of which was bouncing, right? When this thing comes up against the wall, it's got some inertia, it's got some energy, and it tend to bounce off the wall before it could stick. So they actually developed a suspension that absorbs some of this impact as it touches the wall. They look towards a number of possible applications, things like structure inspections, things like that, where you'd want to send a drone up, but then have it perch itself, collect some data, maybe move around, inspect different aspects of the structure, for example, and then fly off and go to the next one. So I think there are many other applications. You can probably think of some, David.
Yeah, I can think of some. It's the proverbial, they want to be the fly on the wall.
Yeah.
My co-host set me up for that. You know, how many people right now would love to be a fly on the wall in the Oval Office or various other places in the world? So interesting. Microspines, I think, are really cool technology. If people don't know what microspines are, microspines are Velcro. things that climb walls have a way of hooking into what you don't see. So if you have a piece of wood, or if you have a other sort of rough surfaces, the microspines are like the hooks in Velcro. You know, Velcro is hooks and loops.
Right.
There are micro little, right? Well, microspines work like that, except the surface becomes the loops. So these, and we're talking about really, really small, you know, if you look at a wall through a electron microscope, you'll see that it's got pits and crevices, like someone climbing a wall barehanded. You know, they look for the hooks and they look for the crevices so they can stick their hand in there to pull up. So that's what microspines are. And it's one of those fascinating technologies that I've always sort of liked. It's nature's nature always seems to know better than the rest of us. So
you're a Velcro nerd, David.
I'm a Velcro nerd. I like that.
All right. Congratulations to Sherbrooke on this. And I think they have a number of other research areas that they want to continue to explore with this SMAD. So interesting developments to come, I'm sure. But the video is great. Look for it in the show notes on the UAVDigest.com.
So we don't have a lot of feedback this week other than an advertisement for me and the Big Drone Show. As I've said previously, on September 27th and 28th in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, there is going to be the Big Drone Show, and yours truly will be there. Hopefully, I will get to meet some of our famous listeners, and we can talk shop. And if you want to know more about that, the Big Drone Show has a banner on our website, and you can, of course, get to our website. It's theuavdigest.com. And if you click on the link, please do. That way they will know who's looked at it, and that will help us promote the show more. And we do always have a lot of ongoing conferences and events on our website. So definitely check back on a regular basis, because you never know, there might be a drone event near you.
That's right.
So I guess with that, Max, we're running a little long. We talked about microspines too long. So I guess I'm going to say, this is David in Philly.
Are you going to end it right already?
Oh, you know, yeah, we really should do an ending, right?
As always, you can find us at theuavdigest.com. If you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, just visit theuavdigest.com/206.
And of course, you can find us on social media, on Twitter, at UAVDigest, on Facebook, at facebook.com/UAVDigest. Leave us a review on Stitcher, iTunes, or Google Play. Purchase some swag at Cafe Press, or become a patron of the show at patreon.com. So I guess now I'll say, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
See you next week, and thanks for listening.